Jean-Bertrand Aristide's departure from Haiti on Sunday marks the 33rd time a government has been overthrown in that Caribbean nation. For a perspective on Haiti's history of political upheaval, we spoke to journalist Amy Willens, who's written widely on the country and is the author of The Rainy Season, Haiti Since Duvalier. She also edited and translated Aristide's 1990 book, In the Parish of the Poor, Writings from Haiti. Willens has written for The New Yorker and other publications and is currently a contributing editor at The Nation. I asked her about the slave uprising 200 years ago in which Haiti won its independence from France.
Haiti was the richest colony of the French and a huge producer of sugar. The slave population outnumbered the planter population by something like 20 times. There were hundreds of thousands of slaves and thousands of planters. And it was an extremely brutal colonial regime, and the slaveholders was one of the most brutal of all the slaveholding colonies. Eventually, in 1791, it began, and there was a slave revolt, sealed in blood at midnight during a vodou ceremony in the countryside. Some slaves rose to power among the revolutionaries, and it was the time of the French Revolution, so it was a heady time for people who wanted liberty in the world anyway. And it was a French colony, so the slaves heard about liberty and fraternity and equality. They drove out the planters in a very cruel revolt in which people were brutally massacred. And, of course, it poisoned the relationship between Haiti and France, I would say, forever. The French eventually, when they were ousted, demanded reparations from the Haitians for the plantations destroyed, etc. I think it's one of the few cases in history I know of where the loser got reparations from the victor. But they did. They got millions of francs, I believe, and that would be a huge amount of money right now, and that the Haitian government under Aristide was asking to have returned to Haiti. So there you go. The history of the revolution still alive in Haiti today.
And what was France's response? What's its relationship with Haiti today?
Well, right now it's, the French were the first to call for Aristide to resign. And I think one of the reasons is that slap in the face from Aristide asking for what are billions of dollars now in reparations returned to the Haitian government. During the first coup d'etat against Aristide, the French sort of helped get him out of the country alive. But this time, I think there was no love lost. And the French have their embassy there just like the Americans, and they have a troubled relationship with the Haitians.
You've written often that it's a country without institutions. Is this a product of its early liberation from colonial rule? How do you think that shaped the way Haiti developed as a society?
I think Haitians have a cultural mistrust of institutions. First of all, the earliest institution they knew was slavery, the child of a greater institution, colonialization. And so their whole history was essentially a revolt against an institution. Institutions are generally seen by Haitians as coming from the outside, and Haitians are mistrustful of foreigners because they don't want to be occupied or colonized again. And I think that's really what it comes from. And then there is this ability. It's sort of a fluid society. I've written that it's the system of no system. When there's no system, then it's more organic. And there are these big men and the families around them and then the larger communities. And there's a tradition of cooperative workforces among them that comes from slave times. And it can work. But someone has to impose order.
There's a well-known Haitian martyr, Charlemagne Peyrat, who was a victim of the United States Marines. When did the United States Marines intervene in Haiti, and what was the legacy?
The U.S. Marines came into Haiti in 1915 and remained for almost two decades. During that time, they did some good things. They built a lot of roads. Haiti's infrastructure is still sort of the legacy of the Marine occupation. But they were also very controlling of the Haitians, very dismissive of the Haitians, and basically, ran the country entirely. And eventually there was a revolt in the countryside, which was a special thing because most of the politics of Haiti comes from Port-au-Prince, the capital. And if you run the capital, you can effectively run the politics of the country. And that's what the Americans counted on. And they ran Port-au-Prince and therefore the nation. But there was a peasant revolt led by Charlemagne Peyrat. And he ran bunches of peasants who would attack the Marines and other institutions of, you know, control, planters, cultivators. And his revolt was finally put down, and he was entrapped and assassinated by the Marines. And then his body was sort of crucified on a board or a door, and he was photographed, and that photograph was distributed among the Haitians so they could see that this guy had been killed. And in fact, there's a very famous Haitian painting of the body of Charlemagne Peyrat.
And when people see American Marines in Port-au-Prince today, does that image return?
That image returns, the idea of their humiliation under the American occupation. I mean, there are a lot of Haitians who understand that there some good came out of the occupation, but mostly it's seen as a national humiliation. You have to understand that a people who threw off the yoke of the French colonial system and the army of Napoleon in the late 1700s and early 1800s are very sensitive about their national sovereignty.
Well, let's talk about the deposed president who you know so well, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Mm-hmm. He was a priest when the Duvalier family was controlling Haiti. How did he become so widely known among his countrymen?
Well, he was unfailingly courageous and extremely eloquent in Creole, and his parish was in a slum right at the edge of Port-au-Prince, and so it was a very populous area. And the people who had come to see him preach were people from this slum called La Saline, and he would preach these incredible sort of metaphoric sermons against the Duvalierists, and that led to his being more widely known, first in Port-au-Prince and then throughout the country.
He was widely celebrated for his actions on the day of a massive demonstration at the Army facility. Was it Fort Dimanche? Do I have that name right?
Yes, it's an old prison run by the Army.
What did he do that day that earned him such a reputation?
He stood while bullets were flying and people were actually being killed. The army was shooting into a crowd of demonstrators. He stood there with a microphone in his hand, and he was broadcasting on Radio Soleil, Sunshine Radio, which was the station of the Catholic Church and very important at the time in the resistance to Duvalier. And while the bullets were whizzing around him, he kept on broadcasting in his own eloquent Creole from the actual scene of a massacre. So that got him some repute also.
Of course, he was elected and then deposed 7 months later in a military coup. And right. he became well acquainted with many in the United States because he campaigned for a return to power. And you were there in 1994 when, accompanied by U.S. helicopters, I believe, he returned to Port-au-Prince and resumed power. Aristide, of course, had seen him. He'd seen his power upset by a military uprising. What did he do to prevent that from happening again?
Well, when he came back, that was 1994. By 1995, he had disbanded the Haitian army, and it was a brave thing to do. I think it was also revenge. I mean, he was very angry at them for overthrowing him. They had tried to do it several times before they did it. He had been their victim as a priest in assassination attempts, and he wanted to get rid of them. In retrospect, I think it was a dangerous thing to do, and that seduction and bribery would have been a wiser path in dealing with the Haitian army.
My guest is journalist Amy Willens. We'll talk some more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is journalist Amy Willens, who's written widely about Haiti. Her book is called The Rainy Season. You wrote, when you were talking about this pattern of violence and retribution, doing and undoing is what Haitian politics is about. It's one of the reasons Haitians rarely describe political activity as a continual movement forward, but rather as a process of correcting the mistakes of the past. Do you see any way out of that?
That's why Aristide should have remained in power in spite of his flaws. Because until you can have the peaceful transfer of power, you cannot have a long-term process in which institutions can be built. If the people who come to power now are not going to continually transfer power peacefully to other groups who are legitimately elected in a democratic process, who's to say that whatever institution they begin to build now is not going to be déchouqued, you know, in 3 years? And then where will the Haitian people be again? Who's going to resort to a justice system that is corrupt and will no longer be there, you know, by the time the trial is finished? It just will not work. There has to be a process. And whether or not the United States likes the person who's the president, or whether or not the Haitian elite likes him, the president has to be left in power.
I wonder if you see any parallels between the period right now in Haiti, where a president has been deposed, and the time in the 80s when you were there, when Jean-Claude Duvalier, the dictator for many years, had been deposed.
Oh, for me, this is the worst part, is that seeing Aristide deposed, who I've known for so long and whom I really respected, especially at the beginning of his tenure, and to see the Haitian people behaving the same toward him after his ouster as they behaved toward Jean-Claude Duvalier, it's very shocking to me. And, you know, leads me to suspect all my intuitions from back in the old days when Duvalier left. The déchouquage, the uprooting of all of Duvalier's goods and all of his family's houses, it's happening to Aristide's houses. And, you know, I know that my book, The Rainy Season, was in Aristide's house that was just déchouquéed. And they took out all the books, and people were paging through the books and throwing the family's photographs around. And I'm thinking, you know, my stupid book was in that house saying that Aristide could be a great thing for Haiti. And now look, it's quite heartbreaking.
Aristide reportedly told a number of people, including U.S. Congresspeople, that he was effectively kidnapped by the Americans and removed from power. You know him well. Does that sound credible to you?
You say effectively kidnapped. I believe that's the key word. He's speaking hyperbolically and metaphorically. What I think happened was that he was surrounded by people with arms. He remembered very clearly the first time there was a coup d'etat in which his life was actually threatened in 1991. And it seemed like that to him. And then he was hustled off in the middle of the night onto a plane and didn't know where he was going and was not told where he was being taken. So that felt a lot like kidnapping to him. And I think he uses the word metaphorically. But I think it was an ill-advised thing to say immediately. But, you know, he must have felt it very strongly. And to be carted off to the Central African Republic is really an indignity I'm not sure he should have been forced to suffer.
Yeah, certainly a long way from where he'd come. But he seemed to be saying that he never made the decision to step down.
Yeah, I think he made a decision to step down, but then it was taken out of his hands, and the timing of it was taken out of his hands, and it sounds as if the resignation letter was coerced in the sense that unless he provided it, he would not be guaranteed a safe exit. You know, he was sitting in the car at the airport, and this is from the State Department now in the New York Times, and he was being asked for that letter, the implication being, unless you give us a letter acknowledging you're resigning, we are not taking you out, and if we don't take you out, you're going to be dead.
Was Aristide who was president, do you believe he was the same man that you knew when he was an insurgent priest? Do you recognize him?
I recognize him. But one thing that happened to him was that when you're in opposition, you can be very, very eloquent, and you can say what you think, and you can lead in a sort of unambivalent, unambiguous way. But once you're president, you're supposedly president of all of Haiti. You have enemies who are very powerful. You can't simply promote your friends. And one of the things that happened to Aristide was it was as if his Creole tongue had been cut out. You know, you just didn't hear him saying the kinds of important liberty-loving things that he had said as a free operative before he became president. Also, he began to deal a lot with the international media with whom he spoke in English, and his English is simply not as good as his French or his Creole or his Spanish. And so that made him seem less powerful and less committed to his earlier constituency. And I think the Haitian people felt that, too. I think they felt removed from him and as if he were grander. And in part, they felt that they feel that a president should be important and should have certain things, but they wanted to feel that he was special and especially their president, and it was harder for him to do that once he was in the presidential palace.
Well, Amy Willens, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Journalist Amy Willens. Her book is The Rainy Season, Haiti Since Duvalier.